Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBerry here, and we are back again. We are slowly but surely making our way through the year of 2026 as each Eldritch Horror unveils itself day after day after. Anyway, yeah, so we're back. Time to talk pop culture and the things going on in the world of entertainment here in abroad. I'm Pat DeBerry, brought to you by Flame On. if only.
Where do you begin and Flame On ends?
I mean, honestly, after 15 years, I don't know if there's much distinction anymore.
But we're nothing if not self-sponsored.
I've got all that is for sure. Oh, so accurate in that. And for a short time, our lovely patrons as well. But yes, I'm Pat DeBerry, and I am here with my gaggle of gay cohorts. We've got BJ.
Hi.
As I say, that's where you say hello, BJ. We've got Eric.
Hello.
And we have got Brian.
Good morning.
And we're here to talk pop culture, talk about the things going on in the world of entertainment, media, fun.
The nightmare of society.
Yeah, but maybe we get like an hour and a half of not being at the precipice of destruction and despair. Just for this episode. Then we can go back to it on the next one. Or do a separate despair and this, you know, just despair episode. We can figure that out. But I do want to bring up something because as friend of the show, Luke has been so apt to do over the last couple of weeks, curling and the Olympics has been a hot topic. Both because, of course, every 4 years, it's when people start to pay attention to it. And, you know, now in the world of social media, you get all these funny videos. And as I mentioned, Luke has sent to Brian a couple of really fun ones that I've actually really enjoyed.
Does Luke need my number? Does he need a way to reach out to me? I mean, I'm okay with you sharing it, but I mean, Luke, reach out, man.
Okay. I mean, that's on you. Luke,
you need to reach out to me because I have questions for you. I don't know.
But in addition to these fantastic videos that keep getting shared, there's been a lot of controversy. It has become like, I don't think I've seen a ton of other controversy come out of this Olympics. Granted, I'm not really following them all that closely, so maybe I've missed a bunch of other stuff.
Did you hear about
the ski jumpers injecting their penises to make them bigger?
Their
costumes would be looser, so they would fly farther.
Yeah, more surface area. That had to be explained to me in great detail.
The so noodles and beef showed up on the ski slopes.
Oh no! Oh my god! They're tanuki. They're using it's like pompoco. They're using their balls to like fly further. Are they using
like the saline injection or whatever.
It's like some fanning mechanism. It spreads like Eric said, it gives more surface like fabric to go further. It's ridiculous.
Fabric. Skin.
I did not hear about that.
That one's pretty good though, right?
It's a definite interesting thing to happen at the Olympics. But I got to watch some of the unsportsmanlike conduct coming out of was it Canada?
Mm-hmm. So, Eric, how many times have you had to talk through this issue with people so far?
Well, there's been lots of learn to curls going on at the club. And so lots of people who watch the Olympics come in and they like to boop the rocks or talk about, oh, we're not supposed to tell each other to fuck off, Oscar. And...
Like, I was in Bellingham yesterday, which is, if you don't know the area, it's like north of Seattle, but it's pretty close to the Canadian border. And I had beers. I was sitting there having a beer, and I was talking to this Canadian, this guy from Vancouver. And, you know, I forgot how it comes up. You know, it always does. But I think I said something like, oh, yeah, I'm a curler, because I had my, like, jersey or my hoodie on. And he's like, oh, my God. He's like a curler, too, of course, because he's Canadian. And we started talking about the boop gate. And I think even he was like, yeah, like, obviously the boop thing doesn't matter. It's not cheating. It's just a tick or it's a just whatever. It's not doing anything, really. But the reaction was so unsportsmanlike. But did you know that Sweden actually set up a camera and was like waiting to catch this? Did you know that?
Well, I think people have. I don't think this is the first time people have talked about Mark Kennedy's stone release.
Yeah.
Across like all the Grand Slams and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But yes. Sweden definitely was aware it was going to happen, and
I mean, they put a photographer
ready for it.
They successfully rage baited him.
I mean, they rage baited him too. But they they had a media. I think it was a Swedish media person right at the hog line to capture that. So it's like not even a question. And I guess Sweden's actually been saying this for a while. Like, they've been reporting this to World Curling Federation that, like, this is a problem and that they just need clearer guidance on it. Because it's not just Kennedy. It's Holman does it, too. I guess she, like, releases.
Yeah, she had a rock pulled. And I think Great Britain touches, had a rock pulled.
She gives it a little, I don't even know what to call that, like, around the rim. It's like, it's a different thing than a boop. It's a rim job. I don't know.
That Grand Slam. Those are the only words I'm hearing.
We're talking about Kennedy's release and then
rim job. Make sure you quote us on that.
Tickling around the rim.
Anyway, I've explained.
Ultimately,
this.
The rules are written very vague, and because there are no active officials during every shot, it's very hard to police it. And while I don't think. Again, like you said, what was happening was not going to affect the outcome of a shot. I also don't think it was within the rules.
Oh, totally a violation.
I would not call it cheating. I would not. But yeah. I would say he should clean up his release.
Yeah, I mean, all of us like should be cleaner in our releases, I would say. That's another one you can borrow.
I released twice yesterday.
But Spirit of Curling, for those who are not familiar, is a kind of unofficial code of conduct for all of us as athletes and people who love curling to be better sportsmen, sports people, to compliment each other's shots, to shake hands at the beginning of the game, say good curling, shake hands at the end, all this stuff. And what Mark Kennedy, his reaction, even if he was maybe just frustrated by what he had already perceived was this like mission to catch him or whatever, you know, was uncalled for and no question about it, unsportsmanly and against the spirit of curling. So that's my
exactly
takeaway.
How I would have reacted as well.
Oh yeah.
So ultimately it's been great that more people have been engaged with curling, but I feel also a little sad that the main thing that people who don't normally follow curling will take away from the Olympics is Canada cheated and they won the gold medal. Let's hate them forever.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. We don't like that. I mean, Canada they're great curlers. They deserve the win. They're really good. Brad Jacobs, his team is solid, but
yeah,
it's unfortunate that this is all now in the mix. But I tell everyone I can, it's not cheating. Really doesn't matter. Didn't do anything. Sweeping will do a lot more for you than the boop or the rim job.
So what you're saying is it's not cheating if you make sure your hands are off of it before the release.
There you go. I love that for you.
There you go.
That's good. It's good code of conduct. And it's just the tip. If it's just a tip, it's not cheating.
No, okay.
Yeah.
Double tapping on the release doesn't do as much as the swaggle does.
Got swaggle. It. The swizzle. No, the swizzle.
Swizzle. Swizzle.
Jesus Christ. We need to share that on our socials. Video. This lovely black woman just talking about curling with zero and great. I love this. It's so good. Swizzle.
Sweep harder or not. I don't know what's going on.
She had some other thing. Did I post it in the chat? She had some other comment that was just fucking delightful.
I like how the rules of this game and what everything's called just sounds like a perverted Dr. Seuss book. Like they were mentioning it on NPR, and I was like, okay, cool, yeah. I'm following along, and then they're like, the hog line, and I was like, ugh. And they're like, then the swizzle, and I was like, ugh. The finger stayed in it, and I was like, ah, stop it.
This is a battle against friction, y'all. Truer words have never been said about curling.
We're moms from America.
I just want all of these things on my shirt. I want all the shirts. I'm going to start making them, I feel like, because they're so good. Anyway. Yeah, curling. Curling Christmas is over. Well, actually, curling Christmas has just begun because, as Eric alluded to, there is now a ton of people who want to come try curling. So for clubs that are, whether they're like Seattle, where that's we can't even handle the backlog of people signed up, or like an arena club like Orlando, where it's like, lifeblood, give us more members, please. Like it's a gift that keeps on giving for at least the next 6 months, and then everybody forgets about it again.
And if you want to watch more curling, U.S. Nationals starts tomorrow, and it'll be on YouTube. And then the Brier happens at some point down the line.
Yeah,
I don't remember the dates of the Brier.
Yeah, I don't remember. They just had the Scotties, but I'm glad they programmed the Nationals so close. I mean, I think it's always close, just time of year. But like their marketing is really trying to roll that into that. And our friends in Charlotte are hosting it, so that's pretty exciting. I know Kristen's involved very
heavily. I mean, while it won't be at their club, it'll be at the arena. But
still, yeah. They're involved. They're very involved, I found out. We're hosting the 5 and under Nationals here in April. And it's a labor of love, although that's here at our club at least. But when they did Everett Nationals, it was a lot of work. So
that's got to be tough to get 4-year-olds to curl properly. I don't think they had that great
good joke.
I need to use that one. That's good.
And unless it was a surly curly a Canadian telling me to go fuck myself, I don't know if I want to watch the Nationals. So I'm sorry. Now I want more feistiness in my curling.
I don't know. John Schuster's been known to say some 4-letter words on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
True. Not directly to anybody, but
yeah. I mean, like, yeah. I don't necessarily need it to be. You know, like it could be inter-team. Go fuck yourselves after a bad shot. Like, you still keep the sportsmanship amongst teams, but
nah, I need fist fighting.
Now then, you go to hockey.
Yeah,
and then a few hours before we are recording today, the U.S. men's team on the, what was it, the 36th anniversary, 46th anniversary of the Miracle?
It was 1980, so
okay,
46, yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I mean, most of us weren't born yet, so.
Nope. Most of us, yeah. The majority of the people on this call were not born yet.
Wow. Y'all.
We got to feel young somehow, right?
Mm-hmm.
But anywho, yeah, so U.S. men's hockey team won the gold, so good on them. What is it, Alyssa Liu? It's the first U.S. Woman to win a gold medal in figure skating since 02,
if I'm right. Yeah, Sarah Hughes was the last one.
Yeah. It's into Donna Summer.
MacArthur Park on ice.
I was shocked. I mean, there were so many more modern choices at the other, you know, different ones I watched. That one, I was like, what a throwback. But
for a 20-year-old, yeah, it's a very interesting choice. Her free skate, though, was to Zara Larsson featuring Pink Panthers. So it's not like all of her music choices were.
So wait, that wasn't free skate? Which one? Oh, that was ice.
No, I think you're talking about the exhibition performance.
Maybe that's what it is. I'm sorry. Yeah. So the free skate was to MacArthur Park. That's where she won the gold. Okay. And then did the like the exhibition dance to Stateside or some song along those lines, titled something along that Zara Larsson featuring Pink Panthers.
Did you see the Kung Fu Panda gala exhibition dance?
No.
Oh my god. No. Go look it up. It may they do it at the end, I guess, which I actually didn't know they even did this. They have this whole fun gala. It's all for the crowd. It's all like fun.
Yeah. And they always do that every Olympics.
I guess I just never caught it, or I didn't register that it was. Anyway, Kung Fu Panda, one of the better figure skates from Uzbekistan or Kazakhstan, comes out in a giant panda suit and is like fighting Deadpool and Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat and getting flung around and doing triple axles. It's wild. It's great. I don't want to spoil the ending. Also, the ending is also pretty amazing. What they need to finish it. So yeah, if you want to look that up, it's up on YouTube. It's like a compilation or something, but it's good. It's all over like TikTok and Instagram too. So
I remember an article in the weeks leading up to the Olympics that there was a male figure skater who had been performing a routine, a Minions themed routine, that all of a sudden he was told that he couldn't do that because they couldn't, NBC could not get the license to the music that he was using.
Wild.
He ultimately got it cleared because of social media backlash, I think, but crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the male figure skater who did the first legal backflip in competition.
That Ilya?
Yes.
Yeah,
Ilya's really good. I had never heard of him, and I watched, I think it was that, was it the one he was in that? There were some outfits. There were some really interesting outfits on the ice. And did you all see Johnny Weir's outfits off the ice? Oh my god.
Every day for Johnny
Weir. I've only seen Johnny Weir's outfits on the Traders this season.
It's probably comparable.
I was gonna say, so it's the same thing that he's wearing to be a commentator for the Olympics.
They're epic. They're good. They're all over socials. But yeah, no, they Ilya's great. Didn't he fall or have some huge?
Yeah, I think he had two falls during his free skate.
Ugh, that sucks. But whatever one I watched earlier, he didn't fall. Amazing.
But as I keep rightfully seeing it pointed out on social media, let us not forget Sarah Bonaly, who did it somewhat 20 years prior when it was still illegal, as a big fuck you to the figure skating officiating committee or community, but ended it on one and landed on one skate.
Yeah.
So,
and if you want to know more about her story, she has a whole episode in the docu series Losers on Netflix.
Oh, is she in that one? I think that's the one.
I know you probably just watched the curling episode and didn't watch anything else.
Okay, I was sitting there like, wait a minute, is this the one with the cheese? There's another show, and maybe not be Losers. They chase the cheese down the hill.
But, I don't remember that.
No, Losers. Yeah. They had the curling one. That's right. Yeah. I'm not going to watch
it. Yeah, that's somewhere in the... It's not the Nordics, is it? They have the annual cheese race. England. Is it in England?
Yeah, it's in England. It's some village, and it's their whole thing.
They set the wheel of cheese down, and then everybody runs after it, and majority of them crash into each other and fall.
There was a Super Bowl commercial that referenced that, I think, this year, from what I remember. We didn't talk about the Super Bowl yet. So, Pat, this is actually a transition, not really good, but what did you think of Bad Bunny's amazing show? What was your reaction to that?
So I was in Seattle.
Oh yeah, that's right. you were at the Bear Social.
I planned a trip to Seattle on Super Bowl weekend, not realizing it was Super Bowl weekend and that the Seattle Seahawks were in the game. The only way it would have been more oblivious is if I had gone to visit friends in San Francisco, where the game was actually being played. But I will say this, I'm glad that I did not, I was planning to go from the social to just check out a couple of other bars, because I've still only been to two bars in Seattle.
Shame.
And I'm really glad I didn't, because apparently Capitol Hill was a bit of a crazy place. But so I was in Seattle while the Seattle Seahawks played, and was at the Bear Social at the Lumberyard, which was fun. Lots of sporty bears in their jerseys and sports attire.
Get down to jocks? Because that's a thing. Every so often you see people do it, but
there were a couple. But I think
not an underwear party, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think the weather wasn't as conducive.
Oh,
it is
like that stops us. Come on.
I know, but it just seemed a little, a little less like that.
Yeah.
And then they would, they would show the game and then they would put music on. They had, a DJ putting music on during the commercials, which is fine considering most of them were for either some type of cryptocurrency or AI, and both of which are the death of society. But then we got to the halftime show. And I will be completely honest and completely vulnerable about this. I cried through most of it.
Aww.
I absolutely just, I melted during it. It was just, I also did not understand if he was carrying a coconut or a football for half the time that he was holding that football. but there was something so incredibly, I wasn't even at the hopeful part yet, but there was something so strong and so empowering about seeing Latinness, but in this case Puerto Ricanness, being portrayed on this platform and being a very white passing Hispanic person, a very white Caribbean person, with everything that's going on, I have the luxury of privilege in not having to be as worried about the things that are going on directly impacting me personally, my person. So to see that on just being presented, to see the intersectionality of queerness in the performance and the dancers, it broke a little something in me. I was there with a friend, Brian, who I was standing there with him and I had tears coming down my face, and I was like, you just don't understand like how much this is like is hitting me. And it's why it's lovely to have supportive friends when you have those types of things going on, because he was very, very supportive and was a very good person to have around at that point. And then I loved it because then Gasolina hit and I was like, fuck yeah, it's for the white people. The white people know this.
That's hilarious, because I was in South Texas during all this in a border town, and I went to a Chili's to watch it. The least populated place I could find in Texas. Because I
for that real Mexican food, right?
Yeah, right.
I started to go to a couple of different places, and they were all packed, and like varying degrees of people about to get into fist fights over a halftime show. So I was like, I'm going to go to the most empty place I can find, which is a Chili's. And that came on, and it was like all the people who were watching that were Puerto Rican or primarily Spanish speakers were like having a blast. And then Gasolini came on, and then everybody in the entire restaurant went nuts. And I was like, wait, what?
it was for the white people. He knew. He knew what was going on. He said, here's, we need a quick break so that way everybody gets in. But I felt like Jennifer Lopez at the award show, just going, mi gente Latino. Just and getting really excited. And actually, your curling friend Ryan was there with us.
Oh, wait. Not Ryan, Joe?
No, Cub Ryan. I met he was at the Chicago gay curling event a couple years back when
he was in Seattle.
Cub Rye, maybe not Ryan. So
I don't know. We have to show you a picture.
But it was funny because we were just like, yeah, like mi gente Latino. And then we're all just, you know, again, getting emotional, seeing all these different transitions. And then Lady Gaga pops up. And it's like, again, for the white people. But yeah. she's the cool, like, you know, white friend that you allow to come to your family gathering.
Allyship.
Yeah, allyship.
Well, when all of like the Fox News is like, no way, people at all. It's like, what? I mean, granted, yeah, it says Miss Estefanie, but you know, I
mean,
do we not
consider Italians white anymore? I mean, like back in the old days, like, come
apparently
on,
apparently not.
Well, I mean, Ricky White was also a delightful bone to a lot of, like, you know, people my age or in that, you know, formative era where he was, you know, in Menudo and all that. But like, yeah, also fucking such a glow up as a daddy.
I was gonna say, Ricky Martin, and it's like, when I talk about the intersectionality of Puerto Rican and queer or Latin and queer,
yeah,
it just got gayer as the entire show went on.
Leveling up. Like if Bunny had like a skirt like he loves to wear, that would have been the only other thing to make that queerer, you know.
But you know what? I'm happy that he didn't. Only it's just because it was like it just pulled all of these other elements into it.
Yeah.
And not to say like, yes, non-binary, like how he presents in the kind of a gender fashion, but like to see these other aspects of it brought in to really just heighten, like, from queer culture, it just it was so good.
The two dudes fucking in the truck was a big one.
It went from that to Gaga to Ricky Martin, and it was like, okay, this all makes sense. And Pedro Pascal, like
who now we just kind of know is also more queer than we thought.
Oh.
Did you see he's dating like that queer, one actor?
As queer as I wished.
Yeah, well, all of us. Yeah, athlete. He's dating an athlete or something that they. Anyway, doesn't matter. Not a big thing. But yeah, I loved just the little who's who in that party scene.
Okay, I'm not gonna rush out and start listening to Bad Bunny. Not really. You know, doesn't fall into the line of music that I'm listening to most of the time. But I appreciated it so much. I thought it was such an amazing piece of art when he and the entire when they started with the flags and he listed every country from the southern tip of the Americas all the way up in geographical order from bottom to top. Dude, I was like, oh my God. And then I didn't even see, because of the way that it was shot or the way that we were, like, the kind of the scenario we were in, the billboard or the like the big screen. Like, I didn't even see that until after the show. And no matter what, it was like, I just felt so much more hope and joy from that 12 and a half or 13 minutes than I have in a long time. And, you know, like, it just, yeah. I thought it was amazing and up there with probably one of the top ever halftime shows for a number of reasons, but especially for where the world is at this point in time. So incredibly needed. Did not have to. It made a resounding point without ever once having to utter essentially a negative word against what is going on at this moment in time. And that was so fucking powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Look at us doing sports talk for the first half hour of the show.
Who would have thought?
Barely. Barely. And here's my dad played for the Seahawks, and I didn't even watch the game.
He
the
did?
Last time the Seahawks. Yeah, he I played for the Seahawks and the Bills.
That's I remember your dad was an athlete. Forgot it was the Seahawks. Because honestly, probably when you told me years ago, like I didn't care about the Seahawks at all. And now I'm wearing like blue and green around everywhere. It's a whole stupid. Yeah.
Oh, no, it was wild. When I was in New York, I can't remember what bar with my friend Adam, and somebody had walked up, and I was just like, oh, hey, I'm BJ. And he was just like, you know, is that what you do? Or is that your name? And I was like, yes. And but then I was like, oh, it's Byron Jr. And he was just like, oh, I remember a Byron Franklin that played for the Bills. And I was like, that's my dad. And then he bought me like four drinks. So I was like, cool. but yeah, he actually, I think he gets like a certificate or like, I think he gets a ring. I think alum all get rings every time they win the Super Bowl.
Wow. That's know that. That's pretty cool.
I think it depends on the team, but I think he got some sort of it's not the same Super Bowl ring the team gets, but he gets like an alum like Super Bowl ring from the Seahawks, and he got one last time. So
that's really cool. Do you know the Seahawks are being sold? This is totally who cares. Paul Allen of Microsoft fame, who passed away like a few years ago, his wife owns it, and it's like. Basically, in his will, it was like, at some point, sell it off to raise money for our charities and the foundation and all this stuff. So they are finally now selling it off to, they haven't said. But I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing. It's interesting. But yeah, I mean, everyone here is like, crazy about the Seahawks.
I view sports team owners as like modern day plantation owners. So probably not anybody good.
Well,
you look at pictures of them and most of them are...
But that's the thing. Like, it's kind of sad because Paul Allen's wife is like huge philanthropist. You know, she's not what you'd normally associate. So it's kind of
there's probably some nice ones out there. It's just the whole process of training people and making sure their health is good and they look good on camera gives me the ick a little bit. Not gonna lie. Back to reality, baby.
All right.
Anywho, so one thing I forgot to mention is Mariah Carey performed at the opening ceremonies of the Olympics, and that just...
Oh, that's right.
I'm excited. I was excited for that. Singing in Italian, which apparently drew some criticism, but then she also did her song Nothing is Impossible, which is a lovely track off of her most recent album. So, yeah, anywho... One other piece of gayness to go with the sport.
Nothing from Glitter?
Is she known for singing much in Italian?
No, but her the song she did.
I was just curious. Like, I mean, she sounded great. I was just a little confused why she was there. I didn't know what ties she had to Italy.
I Gaga think it wanted Mariah.
Gaga did the French Olympics 2 years ago. I mean, they bring in a big name. Why was there criticism of her singing in Italian?
Well, because they were like, well, why don't we have an Italian singer doing this? And they had like big screens with the pronunciation, like the song, the lyrics, but in phonetic spelling. So that way she would get it right. Whatever. But her mom is also an opera singer. And
they had Bocelli there too, didn't they?
Yeah, there was I think another person also that...
I think it was Bocelli. I mean, he's a huge name in Italian. I mean,
No, in addition, I think there was also another, I know that there is a tie, and I want to say it's something, there's some tie with like Race Chaser, or there's something that like we all talk about where like this other person who's known for this thing was also singing at the opening of the Olympics. But with her mom being an opera singer, it was one of her favorite songs, so she did that, and then Nothing is Impossible. So either which way, I'm excited for I'm excited for Mariah to be doing more things. I mean, granted, this feels very Christmas because it's the Winter Olympics. But, you know, with a storied history and a storied career like, you know, the one and only Mariah Carey, it just, it's nice for her to be out there and doing things that are not just, here's, you know, here's all I want for Christmas is you.
She wasn't immediately put back in the deep freeze. They kept her out a couple extra months for the Olympics. And
let her count her millions.
Apparently she popped up on her son's Twitch stream too.
Again?
Yeah. And she just wandered into his streaming room.
There's a video from a couple of years ago. I want to say it was pre-pandemic times where Rock was streaming and talking to his friends on Discord on stream, and Mariah and Ro walk into his room, and she just kind of pops in, and then you hear all of his friends on Discord going, "Hi, Miss Carey." It's just so ridiculous. "Hi, Mrs. Carey. How are you?" And he's like, "Mom, get out of here." That's hysterical to me. But anywho. So, sports, gayness, and fun times. Let's pivot into our topics for the month of February. Things that we've partaken in, watched, done. I don't know. Whatever kind of descriptor you want to use for it. Eric, I'm going to toss it over to you. What are you bringing to the table for us to chat about?
So I've been watching A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is one of the prequel series to Game of Thrones. I wasn't sure if I was going to watch this because I did not watch the dragon one.
House of the Dragon.
Yeah, I didn't watch that one because I think I was still annoyed at the last season of Game of Thrones. And I was like, I don't even care if this is good or not. I refuse. And so I wasn't sure if I was going to watch this. And honestly, I almost turned it off after 10 minutes of the first episode. Because I was like, I don't know if I want this. This doesn't seem tonally what I want in a Game of Thrones show at all.
Is it that moment that I'm thinking it is right after they play the sort of epic main Game of Thrones music and then something happens?
Yeah, and you just see his ass hanging out behind a tree with shit falling out of it. And I'm like, what is this? This does not feel like
it's delightfully tone subversive throughout the show, but that first couple episodes, yes. Oh my God.
Yeah, the first two episodes feel so weird tonally, and then it settles into the more serious story.
I think it had to puncture the balloon a bit because the other Game of Thrones show is very much in line with Game of Thrones, right? But this did you read the short story this is based on?
No.
Ed's Night or whatever. I read it years ago. I very vaguely remember any of it. It's definitely not Game of Thrones. I mean, it is Game of Thrones. It's in the universe, but it's very not that. It's just so much more in Marvel. You hear people say street level. This would be moat level.
And I'm fine with that. I understand that the common folk are going to be not as stuck up as the nobility, but I didn't necessarily need some slapstick stuff, you know.
It was pretty jarring, say the least. Because they build you up to really think, oh, this knight's gonna find his path, and it's this amazing journey, and then the music swells in, and you're like, oh wow, and then he just shits himself. It's great.
It's a poop. Gotta find a place to poop. There ain't no bathrooms there.
I mean, he violently shits himself. I don't even know why. He just ate something that wasn't good.
It looks like a horse shitting. It looks like horse apples coming out of his ass. And it's
really graphic. for the first 10 minutes of a new HBO show, which, I mean, it's an HBO show, so, you know.
I've enjoyed the 5 out of 6 episodes. I'll date the recording. The final episode airs tonight. It's just 6 episodes of this first season. Second season has been greenlit. This prequel happens 90 years before the events of the main novel series. So I feel like as soon as they revealed who Egg is, I was like, oh, okay. That's who he is.
Yeah, I don't know the lore, and I actually don't remember this being a part of the short story. So I think they've dressed in certain lore that fits, you know, and it's you really could not care about any other Game of Thrones and just go, oh, huh, he's a whatever, he's a Targaryen, yeah. He's a whatever. And oh wait, there's this guy who looks kind of like Peter Dinklage, but he's a Baratheon. Like what? Like it doesn't matter. Like it doesn't matter. There's archetypes there, and the show laces them in right in a way that they do help advance the story. There's like a kind of a misunderstanding, and then like this guy Dunk, great name. Mm-hmm. He gets in there. He gets in, like he rescues or he saves this puppeteer who's kind of like poking fun at the dragons and showing this whole thing, and she's being attacked by, we find out, was he a Targaryen or something, right? He's the asshole Targaryen, basically, stand-in for all of them. And yeah, no, I mean, it's misadventures and hijinks of this hedge knight, which is basically just a knight with no...
And I kind of enjoy the way, and I hope it continues on, how... Honestly, I don't see how Egg can continue just being the squire of a hedge knight after what's revealed.
Yeah.
And going on into the second season. But it would be nice to see the parallels of Dunk teaching Egg to be a full squire, the way that, was it Sir Arlen? Is that his name?
I think that's it, yeah.
Taught Dunk how to be a squire.
As imperfect as that was.
It feels, in some ways, a little like, not directly, but kind of a little like Frieren in its story. The way they're constantly flashing back from the current journey back to her previous journey with Himmel the Hero. Not that Arlen and Himmel the Hero are the same character at all. Because he is definitely not. Although he's pretty well endowed.
And he gets along with the ladies, evidently. Like he's like, you see him whoring, you see him drinking, you see him doing all kinds of stuff. Yeah, the dichotomy of what I think Dunk wants to be as a knight and what his mentor knight was is pretty stark and interesting as that. But did you watch? So are you caught up?
In what?
Did you watch the whole season?
Yeah, I've seen all 5 episodes.
So I think maybe I've watched them all then. So the battle, there is a
pretty... Did you see the end of the battle?
Yeah, okay, so is that the end of the season then? There's nothing after that?
No, there's one episode tonight, and then that's the...
Oh, okay, so that's... Okay, so yeah, so basically I'm caught up where you are. The battle that happens, it's not an epic, like, you know, armies and all that. It's just a bunch of knights that are trying to solve this, like, not domestic dispute, but basically it's like somebody wronged somebody. How are we going to resolve who did what? All right, we're going to have a big melee, a bunch of knights. And that was brutal. Like, I remember Game of Thrones being pretty bloody, but Jesus Christ, that you just, this show pulls no punches on what jousting was, and is based largely, the jousting part is based on what they know of, you know, the history of jousting. It's a brutal sport. But then this melee happens, and oh my good God, like both the fighting during it, the resolution after, the thing that happens is what, you know, Eric's alluding to, like somebody doesn't realize that they're dead, and they find out basically because someone pulls their helmet off and oh, your brain's gone. Like what? it's really a tough show, but it's also just such a, like I said, it's such a delightful, like delightful is probably the wrong word, but like studying this one character, just trying to learn how to be a knight. And so simple. And so, I mean, the whole 5-6 episodes is like one event, one tourney. It's over the course of maybe what, 3 days.
Yeah. Well, originally, George R. R. Martin kind of, when they were talking about possibly developing this into a show, he thought it would work better as just like a 2-hour standalone television film, probably just because this entire season happens in, at a 1-weekend tourney kind of. Would, and then they padded it out a bit to be a full 6 episodes, but
they definitely, you know, take advantage of the fact that they could fill in this with some lore. And I don't know, Martin doesn't like some of what they're doing, even though he's an executive producer. I guess he has some say, but not like definitive say, but he was quoted about some disagreement he had, and it
HBO is giving him a lot of money, so
there's a whole thing there, but I'm glad you like it. I definitely have been enjoying it, and did not anticipate, like, I mean, I was curious because, again, I read the story, you know, years ago, and it's just such a self-contained little thing. So that's kind of interested to see now if they keep going with it. What do they do? Is there more? How are they, you know, where are they pulling this from other than some of the lore that he's sprinkled throughout? You know, what's he do? What's going to happen? So.
Well, he also didn't let them develop it until he had finished the additional Dunkin' Eggs stories he had written.
Oh, he did write more of that. Okay.
Yeah.
Then that's what they're using. Okay.
I guess there's like 7 or 8 stories total.
Oh, I didn't know there was that many. Okay. Well, so there's,
because he didn't want to get into a position like what happened with Game of Thrones, where it ended up outpacing the original material. So
I'm going to say that man actually was writing something.
Yeah, he won't write the next Game of Thrones book, but he'll write tons of side stories. And
it's an impossible task for him to try to land the book Game of Thrones with everyone's bad taste in their mind. I don't blame him.
HBO put the bar in hell. There's very little that he could probably do that would be worse than what the season 8 was.
I just feel like, I don't know if that's the reason he's being
even,
so...
Even if... And I mean... He did kind of give them outline points of where he kind of wanted to steer the story. But even if that is ultimately the place he wants to end the books, he has to look and see, everyone hated that ending in the TV show, and now I have to rewrite that.
That's... See, if I were him, I would just double down and just fucking write it anyway.
And Danny turned into a crazy bitch.
Yes. Just go all steam ahead in that.
I mean, that's what the creator of Evangelion did. Like when everybody complained about the ending, the original show ending, he made like a super fucking brutal, like dystopian, sad ending, and he was just like, here you go, fuckers. Yep. And then it took like 2 decades later for him to get over that, mm-hmm. so he could actually like redo the series the way he wanted to. So yeah,
End of Eva is you're right, it's pretty dark.
It's that shit's brutal. And it was, and when they interview him, he's like, because people complained with what I gave them initially, and I was like, oh shit. That man was petty as shit. So
the vengeful
George R. R. Martin, I that is an option. That is always an option, especially when the author is like executive producer on the show or has any creative control. Oh yeah, he could be like, okay.
It would be interesting if after he finishes the books, if they would go back and, I mean, they never will, but if they would remake the series a la Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. And be like, no, this is the good version of the show. Because now we have all the material.
we're all about remakes these days. And in all honesty, I know there was chatter about them remaking True Blood. I know there was chatter about them going back and completely redoing True Blood and one that's more honorable to the books. So it would be interesting. It would be campier. That's for fucking sure. But yeah, that's an interesting way.
I want it to be a very Sailor Moon Crystal.
Mm.
Let's get a refresh.
Fresh coat of paint.
Yeah,
exactly. I'd rather have it more like a Sailor Moon Abridged.
Yes. Yes.
The second one not as fun. I didn't find the second one as much fun as the first one, but
it wasn't. But
yeah. Still really good though.
Yeah.
Awesome. So that name of the show again, Eric?
A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. I saw the House of the Dragon stuck in my head. I'm like, I know that's not it. There we go. All right. Well, let's roll on over to BJ. What you got for us?
Oh my God, I completely forgot for like 2 seconds. I'm actually, so I was racking my brain on what I was going to like bring up and completely forgetting I've started Star Trek Academy, Starfleet Academy. It's not what I expected at all. I think I expected something a little bit more teen oriented, and this is
it's like college.
A little bit more. It's a little bit more college than I expected it to be. And I also didn't expect it to take place, 32nd century, the furthest point out in the timeline. So after the end of Discovery, before the like jump ahead in Discovery's timeline.
Wait,
that
it's set after the end of Discovery, when they're in the future.
Well, yeah. So, well, Discovery ended, and then once they've ended the main storyline, they did like a jump ahead.
Jump ahead. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
So it's the main continuity point now that Star Trek, the TV shows, other than Brave New Worlds, which is still in the past. Yeah, it's the current current. Yeah.
Yeah. Current continuity. And so far I'm loving it. So far I'm really vibing with it. I love, what's her name? The Chancellor.
Oh, Holly Hunter's character.
Yeah, I really like Holly Hunter's character and her. She's like part. What is that? That species Lathani that like lives
or
like,
something? Yeah, they're long lived humanoids. She's a Nala, Chancellor Nala.
Yeah, Chancellor Nala. I'm liking this kind of thing they're doing, like they did with Burnham, where it's kind of like the main character is kind of like on their like second or third strike. And they're not only kind of digging out of their own personal hole, but like, you know, whatever society kind of sticks them. So Caleb's growing on me. Most of the students are kind of growing on me. I love the fact that the computer dean is Stephen Colbert.
Oh, the voice. Yeah.
Yeah. All of the university announcements are Stephen Colbert. And then another fun little addition was Gina Gina Yasher, who I've known from Bob Loves Abishola, which is a CBS Chuck Lorre show that was never advertised. It went for like 6 seasons, like most Chuck Lorre shows do. But she plays Nala's number one, and she's like part Klingon and really fucking funny.
She's half Klingon, half Dominion.
Yes.
She is which from Deep Space Nine people, like, you know, they're like the Dominion that's like the warrior Dominion.
Yeah.
She's lesbian, which is delightful, right? She's with what's her name?
She's dating Jet.
Tig Notaro's character, which is perfect.
Yeah, she's dating Jet, and I just finished the episode where I guess Tig's character fucks up dinner and has to like make it up to her. So I really like the dynamic.
So yeah. You've seen what, like 2, maybe 3 episodes?
I think I just finished 4 or 5.
Actually. Oh God, I thought that happened earlier.
No.
So yeah, no, like that character, delightful, like just all the best parts of Klingon and Dominion in one fierce lesbian. I love the Doctor. So I'm a Voyager guy. So
the Doctor's there.
Robert Picardo is such a delight, and he is the Doctor from Voyager. He's a hologram, but he's like, you know, now they're like, you know, hard light, whatever, they can touch things, and he's got a like a sort of fangirl. Is it Jet? What's the character's name? That's Jem.
Sam
is a hard light hologram, like they're their own people now, basically, and she's this very neurospicy in some ways.
She's only like a month old. She's like a newborn, but her programming is that of like a 17-year-old.
Yeah,
and just everything is like exciting and new for her.
It's delightful character. Yeah, I like Caleb. Who's the other sort of pretty boy, ambiguously gay alien guy who looks humanoid?
The piece of shit.
He's kind of an asshole.
Dareem.
There was some hot moments between him and Jaden that I was like, okay, are we doing queer coded here? Because it feels like it.
No, practicing breathing. So the episode I just watched, it was with Jaden trying to like stall some of the military students.
Oh,
and him doing the Klingon jokes. There's that other guy that's a part of like the military academy.
Yeah,
that was like, oh no, tell me another one. Like he was very, very excited, and Jaden was like, the next episode is about him. I'm really excited about the next episode. The Jaden one? Yeah.
That's okay. I thought that you were okay, so I'm a little ahead of that. And yeah, no, Jaden's episode is really good. That's where the breathing thing is all about debate. And there's some moments that made the internet a buzz that Jaden is like this very not non-violent, but he's a Klingon who's very, and actually they're kind of non-binary in a certain way, or they're not, I don't know what they're doing with the gender coding, but they do have them in a skirt or him in a skirt at one point, which is kind of cool, a kilt. But like, he's like a warrior healer. So they're kind of showing the softer side of Klingons. I don't know.
The interesting thing about him is that like, he doesn't yearn for fighting. He doesn't want to fight for himself.
Yeah.
But the moment somebody stepped to Caleb and he had already kind of designated Caleb as a friend, he was like, oh no, I'm ready to fucking throw down now. Which is, I was like, oh, that. And it's a very Worf coded, because Worf was very, very agitated when people would attack people under his protection.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, but I really like, he's so funny. Like when he's just standing there making his grunting noises and just like glowering at everybody when they're about to do something stupid. And he's like, yeah, no, I'm not going to be a part of this.
He is great.
It's
such a great show. It's very progressive in that like all Star Trek should be and has been since it started. It's very like, no, we're going to absolutely have everything all on the table. It's the future. People have moved on from our older bullshit. Like, it's getting a lot of flack because people are like, well, that's too progressive. It's like, oh my god, dude, it's like Doctor Who. Doctor Who and Star Trek were very progressive when they came out, and they always are. Just you may have noticed it or cared.
And this one is indicative of the times. Like, it's like the thing I love about Nala is she's just like, these kids are inheriting a broken universe.
Yeah.
Like, Star Trek, the burn fucked everything up.
If you don't know the Discovery lore, the thing you need to know is, right, the burn stopped all space travel. It just, every star, tons of starships and some planets, including the Klingon homeworld, blew up. Like, it just completely destroyed the Federation. I mean, it was a back to zero kind of thing, and now they're rebuilding. And yeah, so it's a very, like you said, PJ, perfectly, it's very timely in that, you know, the kids now are going to inherit the fucking mess that we've left them, that the, you know, mostly the Trump administration is leaving them. But like, it's very timely. And there's other, of course, you know, they layer in modern issues with the Star Trek spin. You know, it's delightful. It's great. It's not an action show. There's action in it, but they have a spaceship, but the spaceship spends time in San Francisco like you do. It's a beautiful ship. That ship is freaking crazy cool.
Oh yeah. The Athena.
Yeah. The Athena is amazing. Paul Giamatti is this like space criminal warlord guy who's kind of funny but also bad, and the sort of the nemesis of the season. And it's got all the stuff you want from a Star Trek series, but it also is sort of doing that, the adventures of a college, you know, whatever that type of show is, the college adventures.
And they did an animated series which they've referenced a bunch, a couple times, Star Trek Prodigy. So they've referenced the references are not overbearing. The references are treated exactly the way a college would treat its like famous alumni. So you've got the wall of like all the big names. I know that I saw a scene where Sam did historiological research on a bunch of Voyager crew members. And she finds out things that she didn't, like, you know, the general public doesn't know. So it's like one of those things where it's very much a college sort of show. But I actually like the whole thing with now that there is space travel and everything and borders are being reopened, you've got the whole thing with Caleb trying to find his mother. Mm-hmm. All of that, especially with Paul Giamatti's character in the mix, makes me feel a little nauseous. I'm like, this is not going to end well for anybody.
No. Yeah.
Especially in this specific timeline of Star Trek. So I'm like, but I'm here for it. I'm very interested to see how things unfold. But so far it's great. I was upset when they like Discovery ended. I was upset that Lower Decks ended. I know that we're on the last upcoming season, I think, of Strange New Worlds. So I'm like, I want them to keep making Star Trek, but I do know that Paramount got sold to some fucks. So
yeah, I'm worried about the future of Star Trek, like so much more than anything else, because of it being bought by the Ellisons and just look.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, no, great show. Anyone who's curious, like, I mean, I've heard only a little negative because, again, certain things didn't appeal, but like, it's fun. It's a great Star Trek show. Very shiny.
Good. Some new space adventures for the world. Next thing you know, you'll have Starfleet University, and it'll be all right. It'll be a little bit more grown up for you, BJ. Even more so.
Post-grad school.
What?
Postdoc school or something.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Let's throw it over to Brian. What you got for us?
So I am assuming none of you have seen Pillion yet, right?
Except all over my Blue Sky feed of people going.
Yeah, all over my Blue Sky feed.
So this movie has been
a couple of scenes.
Very well marketed to us over the last 6 months or longer. And basically, when we found out however long ago that there was a dom-com, is what some people are calling it, a gay BDSM love story movie coming out with major names like Skarsgård. I always forget his first name.
Alexander?
Is he Alex? Okay, Alexander Skarsgård. Like, pretty much like the main headliner of this. And then the actor, something, is it Skelling from Harry Potter? He was the Dursley boy, Dudley, which you totally wouldn't recognize him from this. It was just like, whoa, like they're making this and it's actually going to be in theaters. Everyone was just like, we couldn't believe it. We were like, oh, this would never go out into major theaters. But last night I saw it in a major theater with a bunch of people. And it was just glorious in its very graphicness. So the story is basically this kid, Colin, is a barbershop, British, you know, barbershop guy, kind of dorky. He lives with his parents. His parents are trying to set him up on blind dates, and he's gay, and they're very supportive. They're like trying to set him on blind dates with guys, which is kind of interesting. And he encounters this biker played by Skarsgård in a biker, you know, kind of like that leather biker outfit you can imagine. Not like the American biker, but like think like, you know, I don't even know the right terms, but like the more modern looking like leather biker outfits that are like full body, and then the helmet that looks like you're out of Tron, that kind of thing. Yeah, think Tron. And so he sees this guy in the bar, and it's this very awkward interchange with the bartender and then these two. But basically, Skarsgård's character's name is Ray, and he like puts like something in a card, like he writes some information in a card, and he slips it to the character Colin, and find out later that it's basically like, meet me here at wherever at certain time, and you don't know why. Like, you're like, oh, I mean, it's implied that he kind of thinks that they're flirting, they're cruising, whatever. So shenanigans kind of take their, you know, whatever, they meet up, they basically end up hooking up very, very delightfully graphically in an alley. You see a lot of Skarsgård, by the way, has a beard. So those of you who are True Blood fans, calling back to that, Eric is the character he played in that, very young at the time. But like, imagine that Skarsgårdiness with a beard. Not a huge beard, but enough of a beard that it really is a nice, he looks good. And this like biker chaps thing that you wear, I guess, underneath your jacket. And you get like the slow-mo leather unzip as Colin is down on his knees because he had been forced there from this kind of awkward wrestling thing that they do. I don't know. Anyway, it becomes a whole like full-time sort of power dynamic situation where Ray is the, you know, alpha or dom, and Colin is the sort of, he's a live-in sub, and he's basically treated like full-time, like a submissive, like he does all the cooking and the cleaning, and you know, Colin and Ray will like wrestle and have sex, and they show some of that pretty, you know, graphically. I mean, there's lube that's brought out at one point. You're like, whoa. And then they go off and have biker adventures with this whole biking gang of gay bikers who actually are real. The filmmaker, gonna look up his name here real quick. He actually found Harry Lighton's the director. He found the local biker community, the gay biker community in England, and had them, you know, be a part of the show. So, I mean, you know, there's definitely some realism in certain ways to this. Jake Shearer from Scissor Sisters shows up as a submissive as part of this gang in a delightful like yellow latex sort of apron. Like, there's like cooking scenes, and they go out camping and have like a kind of camping orgy thing, and they're all like laid out on tables as like a buffet. It's like, I mean, seeing this in a mainstream movie theater, like, is pretty wild. That alone was, you know, worth it. I will say, overall, I enjoyed the movie. It is very much a lens into the power dynamics thing that is specific to this little, like, niche community that's, like, the full-time. And also adding in, like, the fetishes of the leather and the biking and wrestling, too. So it's like, if this is your first like power dynamic experience into the world of BDSM, power dynamic, whatever, it's better than 50 Shades and that one with what was the one with Kate, not Kate, dog bowl, or there was a movie that my brain isn't working, Tom Cruise's, Nicole Kidman was in, and it had sort of a power dynamic thing. I think it's better than those overall, but I am so worried that you're going to have people who have no experience, no knowledge of this community, of this world, and they're going to see this and make a lot of assumptions, and it's dangerous for that reason. For one, there's no consent given by anybody. They just pretty much go for it, and that's a little problematic. And then there's no boundaries discussions, there's no like consent, but also like, okay, well, you know, how about this, you know, and like, that's not a contract necessarily written out, but like just no discussion of anything. And then, you know, Ray ends up being a little problematic, if you will. Like, he's got definite problems and issues that he's working through, but he's using this relationship sort of style to keep himself from being hurt is kind of the implication. Anyway, it's imperfect, but that is in some ways a good thing, because queer representation shouldn't always be perfect, right? We don't always have to be like our best selves in media. Like any other story, it's more interesting when it's messy and broken and there's problems. So in that way, it's, you know, successful. But I seeing that, and just, you know, I was like, oh man, I can just hear my mother It's like the voice of my mom in my head, like, so wait, you, what do you know about this Pillion movie? Is it sounds really depraved and blah blah blah. I can just hear it in my head, and I have to, like, you know, take that out of the equation when I'm enjoying a movie, but also, like, other people who just see this are going to make a lot of assumptions about things. Like, it does end positively, and overall it's like, it's kind of funny in certain ways, because you're getting like that Collins, like, he's learning about this whole world for the first time, and by the end of the movie he definitely has agency and he knows what he wants, and you see kind of his evolution. So I think that's the best part of the movie, is just seeing Collins' journey into kink and, like, figuring out what he likes. But yeah, I don't know. It's good. I think everyone should see it just so they know about it. Not everyone's going to, like, enjoy it the same way.
So it's really just 50 Shades of Gay?
It's, yeah, but I mean, so much better.
Kind of. 50 Shades of Gay. If you see the clip of the camping trip and the picnic, it's very, like, go to Sawmill on a kink weekend, and that's 1,000%. Like, they get it right. Like, they definitely get it, like, I'm like, ooh, they're just telling all of our fucking secrets, aren't they?
It's the most honest in many ways about things. And comparing it to even, I don't know, something, another gay movie or gay story. English Teacher is something I hold up as a fairly good, accurate, like, depiction of gay men, right? And even that pulls a lot of punches. But this one does too, in its focus and sort of niche, like, really, really niche part of the community. But with aspects that, yeah, like you said, you know, you go to Sawmill and you'll see it, whatever. So, I don't know. I'd really like y'all to watch it so we can talk about it and see how we all feel about
a full flame on review of it.
Yeah, it's worth it. And it's in certain, it's wide release now, but, like, it was in two theaters in a major city like Seattle. So it's probably, you know, if you're near a major city, you probably can see it. I'm hoping it quickly goes to whatever streaming service will play it. Maybe HBO. It'll pair well with Heated. Oh, compared to Heated Rivalry, like, you know, like, worlds apart from a accurate, you know, depiction of the queer gay man experience. Anyway, but yeah, no, it was good. I think overall, I would give it 4 out of 5 flames as my rating.
Very good, very good. Final topic, real quick, before we start to wrap this up. I watched Wonder Man.
Ooh.
Yeah, I binged the entire series over the course of one night. I was working on, I was cutting up some t-shirts for a new t-shirt quilt and said, let me put on some Wonder Man. And at first I thought it was only six episodes, and they're only like 30-minute episodes. I was like, okay, 3 hours, not a big deal. We got this. I was up till like 1 something in the morning, almost 2 o'clock in the morning, watching the 4 hours of Wonder Man that it was, because it is 8 episodes. But if you do not know what Wonder Man is, it is an American television miniseries created by Destin Daniel Cretton and Andrew Guest for the streaming service Disney Plus, based on the Marvel Comics character of the same name. It's a 17th television series in the Marvel Cinematic Universe for Marvel Studios. It was produced under its Marvel Television label. It shares continuity with the films in the MCU, and it follows Simon Williams and Trevor Slattery as they try to land roles in the remake of the film Wonder Man. And then Guest served as a showrunner. Yahya Abdul-Mateen II is Simon Williams. You had Ex-Mayo, Zlatko Burek, Ben Kingsley, who reprises his role as Trevor Slattery. Aaron Moyed, Joe Pantoliano, Byron Bowers, Josh Gad are all in the show. And it's a very interesting piece of television. I think that's the best way for me to describe this. Wow. And how I felt about it. It is, I want to almost call it a buddy comedy. Mixed in with a depressing look at being in the entertainment industry. It's done in a way to kind of fight back against the superhero fatigue, and just kind of in response to a lot of the overall sentiment of what's going on in the superhero genre and also give a bit of, give a little bit of credence and life to what makes superheroes so powerful for us, especially when we're kids. And when you come from, in this case, a family of immigrants, when you are othered by mainstream, and I think it hit some of those points really, really well, even if those aren't the points that it was necessarily bringing to the forefront as kind of like the main topics of what was going on. I think it did a really wonderful job playing to those beats in Simon's history and his upbringing, and just feeling that way overall. It kind of ties back to my conversation about Bad Bunny's Super Bowl performance. Like, it's a very interesting, it's a very interesting topic and beat to hit, especially with today's world. I will say, though, it felt bloated, but underserved in the story at the same time. And that felt very difficult for the show to do, but it somehow pulled it off. I wanted more of the story, but I wanted less of what was going on at the same time. It felt so weird. The fact that we had, like, the whole doorman thing, the doorman clause and sign off on the doorman release and all of this. And then it was like, okay, what is that? And knowing that there is a whole thing to it, but then at the same time, getting an entire episode out of 8 devoted to this story that, while yes, does have impact on the story, doesn't really progress Simon's story at all. It informs some of the issues around what's going on, but it doesn't have an impact. If they had maybe spliced up that story and told it in chunks through the first couple of episodes, I would have been like, oh, okay, cool. Like, we get these, maybe even show it in random order, so you're kind of still trying to figure out what's going on. How is this? What is this? But to take 1/8 of this entire runtime and dedicate it to a story that doesn't really have a conclusion, or doesn't really have an impact on the end of this story, and then to tack on the ending, the final beat of like breaking into the prison, that felt like a post-credit scene almost, and it felt like it should have been more of the story. I didn't feel like Slattery's character earned the redemption that happened in a matter of, what, 5 minutes from the time that it came out that he betrayed Simon to when Simon is risking his entire life to go and break him out. It just felt like we were missing. Had you taken that one episode away and maybe fleshed out that part of it, not into a 30-minute segment, but gave it a little bit more breathing room, maybe I'd understand it. But it's like this one person, the one person in the world that he trusts, aside from his mother, has betrayed him. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, this one little thing. Okay, nope, never mind. All is good again. Someone who has that much hurt, I don't see them turning around that quickly and being like, okay, cool, yeah, I'm going to go risk my life for this person again. It just felt unearned when that whole thing happened. I liked the show, don't get me wrong, but I felt like pacing and tone did not always match what it needed to be. And it just felt, it felt like this, I didn't look into what was going on with the writers and if there were reshoots, if there was changes, but it feels like, and even if it wasn't, it feels like one story was written and shot, it was tested, or it was run through the execs, and they were like, well, what if we did this instead? And they had to make changes that chopped it up and did not put the, like, did not give you a, I don't even want to say a cohesive story, just a story that flows properly. And I think that was a disservice to the show. I've heard that there is potential talk about a season two being done for this show, which I wouldn't say I would mind, but I would want it to be a much cleaner story. It served some great purposes for Department of Damage Control and changing that into maybe an antagonist rather than, you know, there have been sprinklings of like, maybe it's not always so great, but now it's actively a problem for superpowered individuals. So there could be some things that it could do to add a different level to the television shows, maybe not in the movies. But I think that with Daredevil season two coming back out, you know, coming back in what, a month from now, from when we're recording this, and like I think it does open up some new possibilities. But I felt like it was kind of a not the greatest, but definitely not the worst of the TV that we've gotten from the Marvel television department. Brian, you've seen at least some of it, right?
Yeah, I watched the first couple episodes, and like so far the tone's great. I love it. But no, I understand what you're saying from a pacing perspective. I haven't gotten to that episode. That could throw me out, but it's very much like Marvel's whatever meets the studio. Seth Rogen's show, which again, that's not the only show or movie, like, you know, the player and all that. But like, no, I'm glad they're doing something like that. That's playing into the acting world and also, you know, superpower Simon Williams stuff. But the acting is great. Like Ben Kingsley, who's such a treasure. I mean, I sit there and go, God, he's still with us. This man has been around for like my entire life as an amazing actor. And he's,
You
know, it's not like a huge role, but it's a great role. And he plays this, you know, carrying this thing out of the Iron Man movies where he was the quote Mandarin into this other thing is it's really layered and interesting. And the actor that plays Simon, I loved him in a few different things he's been in. I think he was in a Black Mirror episode I watched, and just he's great.
He's been in everything. I'm glad they're utilized. I've actually enjoyed, like, they utilized him in Shang-Chi. Here I think is the perfect utilization for him.
Yeah.
With the commentary of like the acting and what makes somebody like the fact that the studio is just like, who is he again? It's like, I think he was a domestic terrorist or something. I've only watched about half of it also. So I got to put it up there in my top, probably my top three, Marvel series. It's just been, the commentary has been really good. And I almost feel like something like this should have come out sooner. Mm-hmm. I think something like this post Shang-Chi would have been a perfect thing to release.
You feel about it after you finish watching. Okay. Because don't get me wrong, the first like three episodes, I was like, this is awesome. And then it goes a little wonky.
Okay.
Once you hit the doorman episode, where it completely just goes away from Simon and Slattery, it gets a little wonky, and that's why I was like, it hurts, because it really did feel like it was getting to that point where it was like, this is really, really good. I'm excited for this. I'm glad this is here, and then it felt like it. Mm-hmm. It felt like they maybe had some rewrites in how they were going to wrap up the story.
Yeah.
And it's tough. But no, Simon and Slattery, it's a great buddy comedy kind of feel to it. And Kingsley brings such an emotional depth to a character that was kind of a throwaway,
mm-hmm.
and then had a little bit of a kind of comedic redemption in Shang-Chi, and then to go into this, it was very interesting. But Like you said with Pillion, I'm curious to see what happens after you've seen it all and kind of have a revisit of your thoughts on the show. Because, yeah, I like a lot of what it did. I feel like it maybe didn't finish out as strongly as it could have. Because I got to a point where I was like, oh, how are we wrapping this story up in like two episodes? And then I was like, oh, there's two more episodes after that. Cool. And then I got to the point where I was like, how are we finishing this up in two episodes? Because it still just was a very odd pacing and storytelling progression. But overall, like, to take a character and kind of be, I don't even want to say colorblind in the casting, because there is a very real purpose as to why this man is Simon Williams in this story. And I think it's beautiful for that. Like, I really do think that for as much as whiny white people can be the bane of our existence in a lot of ways, this is one that please let them whine, because no matter who you are, no matter where you're from, superheroes are such a force of our strength to get through when you don't feel like you belong in the world or to this world. And I think that is it does run a course through the vein of the show, but I think overall it's one of those plot points that does not get enough representation or oomph in what is being presented here, where everything else kind of seems to take center stage on the actual story that's they're trying to present. And I think that's an even better story on the kind of like the B side of it that works. But that's Wonder Man out on Disney Plus right now. Real quick before we get to wrapping up here, I just want to mention, as a huge fan of the show Scrubs, when this episode drops, the first episode of the new Scrubs series will have aired on ABC. I don't know how we're referencing this season. Because technically it can't be season 9, because there was a season 9 of Scrubs. But to those who really love the show, that was never really a season 9. And also, Eric is de-headphoned and has not put his headphones back on. But Survivor gets season 50 on the same night. So we'll have some big monumental pieces of television that we may need to chat about when we next convene. Along with, we'll know who the winner of Drag Race season 18 is by the time that we reconvene.
Oh my god, that's only a month away. Ugh, I'm so behind.
I don't know. Well, I hope, God, at this point, it feels like the show has been going on forever.
Jesus.
It's only been 2 months, but still. I would like to know when it ends.
It never ends. It's a never-ending cycle.
Well, considering we have that and then UK versus the world going on at the same time, it makes it very challenging to remember what's going on in which too franchise.
But... Too much. Too much Drag Race. And now they're doing Canada All-Stars.
Then you'll have... When those are done, Latina Royale will have started.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then Canada All-Stars, and then...
Are they getting an All-Stars?
Yeah, Canada.
Yeah, they just announced it's going to be Brooklyn, Jimbo, and Priyanka are the judges.
I'm excited.
Okay, so I will not be watching Canada's Drag Race All-Stars.
Oh, wrong. They'll boop everything. It'll be great.
I can't. I can't with Jimbo. Priyanka gets on my nerves, but like whatever. But Jimbo, I just can't. Come at me with your pitchforks and torches, folks, but I do not and will not like Jimbo. It's just the way of the world. But very good, very good. And then also, if you have not listened to Hilary Duff's comeback music, she just put out her new album, her first one in like a decade or so, maybe actually like closer to 13 years. I think maybe 2015 was when Breathe In, Breathe Out came out. Overall, pretty good. Just saying. Go enjoy yourself some Hillary Duff on this fine wintry day that you're listening to this podcast. Because it is no longer in the 60s here in Chicago. Fake spring is done. We're back into, we're in second winter now.
Aw.
Got to walk around with no jacket on for a while. It was lovely. Can't wait till spring. But anywho, it has been a delight and a pleasure chatting about pop culture with all of y'all. So, dear listeners, if you listen to, watch, or be a part of any of the topics that we've chatted about today, let us know. Reach out to us on social media. Find us at flameonshow.com. Send us an email. Reach out to us on social media. At least using one of those things. I don't know. Find me on Blue Sky. It's really the only Blue Sky or Instagram. The only things that I use right now.
And Luke, send me a message. Like, no, this pass through nonsense.
Friend of the pod, Luke. Go find him. You'll have to figure out his Facebook name before you can send him a message. But
Curling Bear. It's so easy. Although it's probably private. Flame on Brian on Instagram. I don't know. They're on somewhere. You'll find me.
There you go. Well. Again, we appreciate you all joining us for another roundtable discussion of the pop culture that we have enjoyed taking in the past month. Until we meet next time, dear listeners, flame off.
Bye.